This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work blends classroom learning with extensive field education guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Chicago's own Tom Skilling. For 45 years, he has predicted the weather and helped you understand the science behind it. He's guided us through rain and shine, floods and droughts, blizzards and heat waves. He's chased tornadoes and been chased by them.
It's right overhead almost. Wow. Oh my God, there it is. Wow.
Oh, it's literally right behind us. It's right above us. Come on.
We're being chased by a multiple vortex tornado.
This is like something out of a movie.
And as you've most likely heard, he is hanging his hat next month when he retires from his role as chief meteorologist at WGN. Now, before that, we've invited him on the show, and we started off at the beginning. And I mean the very beginning. Tom got his start giving weather reports at the tender age of 14. So I had to ask him how.
I was always interested in the weather. My parents could never quite figure out what they had done wrong to get somebody so wedded to this notion that he was headed toward a career in meteorology. But I never thought I'd go into media weather. I don't know where this came from. Nobody in the family was involved in meteorology. But you know something, it's been a lifelong passion. And boy, for anybody to be able to pursue a career that, you know, has been something they love.
Yeah.
It's so amazing. Well, you know, Sasha, I went to work thinking they were going to fire me the early part of my career. And so to be approaching age 72 and to have made it through in this dog-eat-dog business is a bit surprising, you know?
I mean, what were the weather reports like from 14-year-old Tom?
Oh, my goodness. Well, let me tell you how that came about. I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I don't remember. I only lived there 2 years. And we moved out to New Jersey. My dad was a mechanical engineer by trade, and he traveled into New York City every day. He sold huge industrial valves to power plants and to water treatment facilities and all. And I grew up at least 13 years in New Jersey and was always fascinated by the weather. And when you were a young person interested in weather back in those days, you didn't have the internet the way young people do today. You had the newspaper, and there was a publication that came out of Washington, D.C. from the superintendent of documents facility there. Mm-hmm. They set out something called the Daily Weather Map. And when it was mailed from Washington, I remember I had paper routes to pay for this. I earned like $2 or $3 a week. And every year you'd send off $9 for an airmail delivery of this daily weather map to the superintendent of documents. And it would come the next day out in New Jersey. Well, lo and behold, my dad is transferred out to Aurora. And I was in the seventh grade and 14, as you pointed out. Mm-hmm. And it turned out the daily weather map arrived 4 days later. Well, this was really your only connection to real-time meteorological data other than some simple newspaper weather maps. The daily weather map included an upper air chart. And as a little kid, I used to look at the New York Times and the Newark Evening News, and I saw they would have a weather map, and then there'd be a little insert map that said, here's what the weather map will look like tomorrow.
Oh.
And lo and behold, there'd be a cold front that didn't have a storm on it, and in the forecast map, there'd be a storm on it. And I thought, how in the world do they know that a storm's going to develop on that front? And I thought, it must have something to do with the upper air. Well, the only way I could get an upper air map was through the daily weather map, but when we moved to Aurora, it arrived 4 days later after it was published, mm-hmm. and not the next day. So I wrote a radio station, WKKD, out in Aurora, thinking they could do anything. And I'm told I wrote an 8-page letter, which suggested that if they could get me some current weather maps, I, as a 14-year-old, would do a better forecast for them in Aurora than they were getting from Chicago. I look back at that, I think the audacity, because I really wasn't a cocky kid, but I... you know, and the point is they went to work for me. We, the program manager there, a fellow by the name of Rusty Tim, and I drove into Woodlawn Avenue on the University of Chicago campus, which is when the then Weather Bureau, that's where they issued the forecast for Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, right there on the campus. They came out of that office on Woodlawn Avenue. And they decided, they told me they would send some weather maps out if we'd pay for the postage and the reproduction. And I found out later, Sasha, there were only two sets of weather maps sent out from the Weather Bureau office on Woodlawn Avenue, one to Argonne National Laboratory and another one to this Tom Skilling. And I found out from Weather Service colleagues, they all wondered who in the world this Tom Skilling was. They were setting maps out to. So that's how that came into being.
Oh, my goodness. And you were destined for this. You were destined for this. And over the years, over the decades, Tom, I mean, the way that you do your job and just the field of meteorology, I know that that's changed. Oh. And I know that as a teen, there wasn't, you know, the Doppler radar, for instance.
No. No, you know, Sasha, it was a different world. In fact, you know, I think most of us in meteorology today look back at those who came before us, who, for instance, had the responsibility of forecasting the 67 blizzard here in Chicago and the April 21st, 67 terrible tornado outbreak. Both are benchmarks. The snowstorm in 67 is, to this day, the biggest snowstorm that ever hit Chicago. The tornado outbreak, April 21st, 1967, included the Oak Lawn tornado, the Belvedere tornado. It was absolutely the most horrific tornado outbreak this area has ever seen, and we've seen some bad ones. And, you know, the forecasters didn't have tools in those days like satellite imagery, like Doppler radar, like numerical model forecasts that we look at today. And yet they did a respectable job. They missed the snowstorm in 67, but, you know, did a pretty good job of forecasting the severe weather outbreak that included the Oak Lawn tornado. So It's been remarkable, the changes that have occurred.
Well, while we're on the topic of tornadoes, I mentioned, you know, you had a face-off with a tornado. In Oklahoma, right?
You know, the people at the station said, you've got to do a storm chase. You got to go out and chase a tornado. And I said, look, there are three a night on the Discovery Channel, on the Weather Channel. The last thing the world needs is another tornado chase. Oh, but they said, you haven't done it. I said, I don't think anybody gives a darn whether I've done it or not. So it was in that environment that they talked me into going out there. And I had done a tornado chase with the College of DuPage folks a decade before. And we'd gone out and unsuccessfully looked for tornadoes in the plains with the group from COD. But we embarked on this tornado chase. And my word, we went out there and I... You know, all through my entire career, I've talked about tornadoes, I've done programs on them, I've watched videos on them, but I'd never really seen one personally. I probably cleared hundreds of tornado warnings without ever having seen it, the tornado. I'm in a windowless office clearing these warnings coming in and looking at storms on radar, but not seeing them from the ground. Well, I saw it. We went out to Oklahoma. We pulled over to the side of a road and watched the tornado roping out in its final stages off in the distance. And I thought, well, that's the last tornado we're going to see on this trip. We embarked, got back on the highway, and we were there with Spigneau Bizdad, who's a photographer with the Chicago Tribune. He was with us in our car. And I had Steve Scherer, one of our video journalists, with me. And Pam Grimes, who was our producer, and we're driving down the highway, having seen this one little tornado fade out. And Spigneau, sitting in the front seat, quietly says, I think we've got one following us. Well, we had so much equipment in the car, you couldn't see out the window. So I rolled down the window, looked out, and here is this multiple vortex tornado approaching us. We're moving at 60 miles an hour on US 10 down there in northeast Oklahoma. And we've got this multiple vortex tornado approaching us, even moving at 60 miles an hour quickly. And it was fascinating. I mean, to watch that thing evolve in person. And I must say, it was really quite an event. Wow. They were right. We should have gone there, and we did.
Oh, my goodness.
It was interesting.
Well, I mean, I think what's coming across now as we listen to you, Tom, and that we can see when you're giving your weather reports on the air is just how fascinated you are with the weather. I think that is what sucks viewers in when we're watching you. We love to see how much fun you're having doing this. What is it that just captivates you about predicting and tracking weather events?
Well, I think the far-reaching impact of the weather. You know, weather reaches into our lives. I've always thought the weather person on the air has a unique bond with the audience because we're covering a subject that in one way or another affects everybody. And I've been privileged in the last half century to involved in meteorology during the period in which the science has come forward probably farther in the last 50 years than in all the time back to Aristotle, 340 BC, who wrote the first treatise on meteorology, Meteorologica, it was called.
Okay.
And that started the science of meteorology. You realize in the last 50 years, we've had computer models come on the scene, Doppler radar, satellite. I went to school at the University of Wisconsin in Madison, which is the birthplace of satellite meteorology. And we sat in classrooms up there when I was going to school in the early 70s, and we watched for the first time in real time landfalling hurricanes and thunderstorm complexes that produce tornadoes and floods. We watched them develop. We had never seen that before. Mm. And all I could think was, as somebody who did part-time weather on television up there and was clearly headed in the direction of a broadcast meteorological career, boy, if we could bring this to television. And then the modeling that's done. I mean, we would go on the air years ago, and we'd have a snowstorm we were talking about, and the new data was only starting to come in when we hit the air at 10 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night, depending on what show we were on.
Yeah.
And today, they run models hourly that enable us to see whether or not our forecast is on track when we're warning millions of people that they may encounter a blizzard tomorrow. Something like that. We never had access to that sort of data before now. So it's really been exciting to watch what's happened. Look at the accuracy in forecasting hurricane landfalls. And all this against a backdrop of climate change, which is ongoing and changing the way our weather is working. So it's really quite fascinating.
You know, WGN producer Bill Snyder has been referred to as the Scottie Pippen to your Michael Jordan. Can you talk more about your relationship with Bill and with your other colleagues at the station?
I'll tell you something. One of the joys of this job has been to work with young people over the years. We've had interns in and to watch careers blossom among these young people as they move into the profession. And Bill is one of those people. He started as a young man with me with a passion toward weather. And I always tell them that we've got a Vulcan mind meld, you know, the two of us, like something out of Star Trek, because Bill's worked with me so long, I almost don't even have to verbally communicate. We just know what has to be done at mm-hmm. what time and all the rest. And the two of us complement each other very nicely. So I'll tell you, it's been fun to watch Bill's, you know, coming to his own in this profession. He always possessed that love of weather, which is so evident in so many young people that have come through our office.
Wow.
There's something about this passion for the weather. Maybe it's the fact that we're immersed in this atmosphere. I mean, we all are swimming through this sea of air that has profound effects on us. It affects our psychology, whether we can do our jobs outside, how we dress, how medicines work, even our mood.
Mm-hmm.
It's all impacted by the weather. And so it seems those who are engaged in following this amazing atmosphere of ours do so with a unique passion.
Yeah.
And Bill is one of those.
Yeah, you have a great relationship, and it definitely shows. You know, as you talk about the impact of the weather on us, when you first started, Tom, global warming, that was a relatively new term, right? And nowadays, climate change, we hear it everywhere. It's on the lips of politicians and meteorologists and regular people every day. So
Yeah.
Talk about that. How has the science of climate change affected meteorology in your career?
Well, I'll tell you something. In my early years, when I read synopses of climate change, what was supposed to happen, I thought, boy, you're going to have to prove this to me. The Arctic melting, the ice up there and all, what are the physics of that? How does that work? Well, it does work, and I understand it now. And I've, in my half century of work, I've seen the atmosphere doing things I've never seen it do before. Climate change is real. It's occurring. All weather on Earth is driven by differential heating, the fact that one area warms more than another. We've been pouring gases into the atmosphere that hold on to and re-radiate heat, and therefore we're changing the distribution of heat in the planet and its intensity. It's affected our oceans and all the rest, and this affects the weather systems and jet streams and all that steer them above us. Mm. So it's a real issue. And the insidious thing about climate change, because there are some who continue to question the science, is it's not something you see out your window every day, and yet it's ongoing. It tends to come in these extreme weather events that are occurring with increasing frequency and with increasing impact. And by the way, you hear common comments about climate change. We've always had climate change. What's different? And we've survived it. Well, the fact is we've not had climate change like it's happening now. It's happening faster, 10 times faster than anything that's occurred before. Climate change, the big ice ages, were largely the product of a change in our orbit around the sun and the wobble of Earth on its axis.
Yeah.
And those kinds of big climate changes occurred on scales of time that were geologic, tens of thousands of years. What's happening now is happening so fast it occurs within a single lifetime.
Yeah.
So the young person growing up today, I was up in Alaska. We were doing a piece on the changing glaciers. I've been going up there since 1980, and the changes in the high latitudes are really amazing. It's warming fast. Glaciers are melting. And a climatologist I talked to up in the Anchorage area made the comment that his teenage daughter now makes reference to her younger years and the changes that she's seen in the ice and the glaciers and the weather up there. And it used to be it took generations to see changes in weather. Now we're seeing it in a single lifetime.
Yeah, yeah. There's also this idea that you hear banded in, about Chicagoland, that Illinois won't be affected by climate change as much as places like California or coastal cities. Oh. Do we just have blinders on?
Well, look at some of the changes that we've seen. First of all, our precipitation patterns have changed dramatically. We see that in variations in lake levels. Lake levels have always oscillated. If you plot the changes in Lake Michigan's level, it's like a sine wave plot. It goes up and down. What's happening is going up and down faster than it used to and to greater extremes. So we get bigger shifts. And when that happens, you've got damage to infrastructure along the coastline. We're a big agricultural state. Our farmers depend on a stable climate. The population we have on this planet is the product of a stable climate, and our climate is becoming unstable. This leads to migration of people. The whole Inca civilization down in Central America collapsed because of massive drought.
Mm-hmm.
There's a drought ongoing down there right now. They can't ship the freight through the Panama Canal that we used to. And one wonders, some of the migration toward our southern border is not in part a climate change issue. There are many other issues involved in that as well. But there are big implications. Look at the Dust Bowl years. We had a whole population that moved out to the plain states. The climate shifted. These people were left high and dry and with a dust storm that developed. That was a climate change-induced action. So climate change is real. And by the way, another interesting thing, there's this notion afoot that somehow climate scientists have changed their minds on climate change, that back in the 70s, the consensus was we were heading toward an ice age, and now they're talking about warming, so the story goes.
Yeah.
Well, that false notion was the product of a couple of news magazine articles in the 70s. We had started cooling on the Northern Hemisphere from the end of World War II up through the 1970s. And some outlier scientists extrapolated that to suggest there might be an ice age or at least a reduction in food production. But that was outlier thinking. The fact is, we've known since before the Civil War, scientists have,
mm-hmm.
that we were going to warm up as we put emissions into the atmosphere from, you know, as part of the Industrial Revolution that started back in the 1700s. So the science of warming has been very stable, and it really has been only a few discordant voices who suggested that we were going to an ice age.
Right.
The consensus thinking has been we would warm, and that's what we're doing.
You know, Tom, we are sure going to miss your highly educational weather broadcasts. What is next for you, though? I'm hearing it's a mix of the tropical and the snowy.
Yeah, well, you know something, Sasha, it's interesting. I'm heading into unknown territory. I've worked since I was a teenager. This is strange for me to ponder not going to work every day. But I look to slow down. I tell people, I'm not going away. I've been going up to Alaska. I'll probably travel up there some. I've been going to Hawaii recently. I've loved that. I find the weather in these different regions fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always going to be based here in Chicago. I hope to do some speaking. I hope to, there are all kinds of things that I'd love to take some people up to Alaska, for instance, as groups, and show them what's going on with the climate up there, and also introduce them to the beauty of that area. And it would be fun to do that out to Hawaii as well.
Yeah.
And what else may develop, we'll see. I'm wide open. I'll tell you one thing. I won't be content to sit around and watch paint fall off the wall.
let me add a little pun there. The sky's the limit for you, right?
I love that.
That's what it sounds like. You know, you have seen all kinds of weather phenomena, Tom.
Yes.
I mean, is there one that you haven't seen up close that you would have liked to? I'm curious.
No.
You've seen them all?
I've seen everything. I even went out, and this was non-meteorological. I went out to see the Kilauea volcano. Fascinating. And you watch this pyrocumulonimbus cloud. It's a big thunderhead that develops over all the heat from the lava. But, you know, I've seen an ice storm that shut down the state of Wisconsin when I was working there. They had 600,000 people without electricity. They had to send generators out to dairy farms to run the electric milkers. I've watched a mayoral candidate defeated in this city, the machine candidate, Belandic, defeated by the inadequacy of the snow removal and the Jane Byrne blizzard back in the late 70s. I've seen the coldest temperatures we've ever seen. I've seen the biggest and most deadly natural disaster we've ever had in Chicago, which was the heat wave of July 1995.
Mm-hmm.
We lost 700 people to heat. So, you know, it's been a fascinating career with a whole range of different weather events. I've watched hurricanes, I've flown into them. We track tornadoes. It's been interesting.
What a journey.
No question. Yeah.
What a journey. That's Tom Skilling, retiring chief meteorologist for WGN. Now, his last official day in the role is February 28th. Tom, it has been such a pleasure. Best of luck to you.
Oh, Sasha, how nice to talk to you. And please say hi to everybody, your colleagues at WBEZ. You do an amazing job.
Thanks,
Tom. It's a real honor to be here with you.
This episode was produced by Meha Ahmed and edited by Dan Tucker and Brenda Ruiz. If you liked the conversation, please consider leaving us a rating and review, because that helps listeners like you find the show. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. We'll talk again this afternoon.